big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality, pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling essential prenatal multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a three-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Okay. Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's hosted by myself, Kyle Sconewell, and my longtime friend from work, Robert Earl, with the shield in hand.
Got the shield.
Did you get that last night?
I've got the mug. No. I'm just like, I'm buying it. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, man.
He's in. Captain America, our own resident Captain America fan, Robbie Earl. I am fascinated to hear your thoughts as a Captain America fan. This is also the first time, I think, that we've recorded our initial reactions episode the morning after. The morning after, right? Don't we normally do it at night?
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to remember the last time we did a morning after reaction episode.
Maybe never. Not Shang-Chi, not Spider-Man, not Deadpool. I'd have to think about it. But I had a unique screening experience in that my only option was to drive to Atlanta, which is about 4 hours away from me. So I left at noon, drove over there, went to the movie, and drove back in one day. So that's why we're recording the next day. It's been a lot of driving for me. However, I got the chance to watch the movie with one awesome dude, lucky man. Friends from Work Plus subscriber, Billy. Shout out Billy. So here's what I did. I found out that I had a guest that I could bring, but because I was driving from Nashville, none of my friends wanted to make the 8-hour round trip just for the movie. And so I couldn't find someone, and my wife couldn't get a babysitter. So I put it out on Friends from Work Plus. Is anyone in Atlanta available tonight and want to maybe come to the movie? Billy responded first, and he met me there, and we had a blast. We got to catch up, and it's such a funny social relationship because he knows a lot about me, having listened to the podcast, and I know nothing about him. But we got to know each other, and then we watched the movie, had a blast, drove home. It was awesome. And I have some gifts from him for you when I see you next. So,
man,
there you go. Hey, one of the really rare perks of signing up for Friends from Work Plus, apparently, you might get early access to a movie once a generation.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. This was, you know, the screeners are always a little bit different, but I noticed that at least in the Austin screener details, they noted that you could bring a guest pretty much automatically. Like, I don't even think that we had to RSVP a plus one, but I don't know if they had the same restriction for you. The restriction was you cannot bring another critic if they weren't invited. So it's like you have to bring a non-critic.
How do they verify that?
I mean, there's no way that they can. But
that's funny. We've never had that happen before.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of easy for me because I feel like normally in the past when the plus ones are hard to get, you sort of have to justify like who you're bringing, and this was the opposite. So
well, and sometimes we haven't had plus ones. I think Spider-Man, we didn't have a plus one.
Yeah.
There's a few.
Oh, for sure. But we did have, just because I always like, before we get into the movie, sort of talking about the theater experience. Was yours IMAX?
No. That Dolby Cinema, you know, like enhanced, but not the IMAX theater.
Okay. Yeah. Ours was IMAX, which was nice. It's not the best IMAX. It's the one you've been to, that one. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think it's where we saw Deadpool, but it is still nice to have it in IMAX. The other thing that was really nice is it was a press only screener, mm-hmm. straight up. So it was like, there were like 40 people in the theater. There was a ton of room, got a really nice seat. And it's just kind of like, I inevitably wind up going pretty soon after. Like, I might try to go this weekend just to get like a different take and to to feel the crowd reaction.
Right. Right.
But it is kind of nice initially to just be able to focus on the
movie. I go itself. Back and forth on that. You know, we've done it sometimes where we're in a very lively fan-based crowd. Like I was actually telling Billy, the Thor Love and Thunder thing, like when you go to the world premiere,
right,
there was so much energy because it's fans and friends and family of the crew and actors.
Yeah.
And so it's impossible not to like it. It's impossible to walk out of there, not be buzzing about it, you know?
Yeah.
So it kind of influences it one way or the other. And then we also had it where we've gone to some press screeners where it's just totally dead. And we're kind of like, man, are we the only ones laughing? Like, do you not think that's funny? And then you kind of second guess yourself. And
yeah.
So it does affect it. I really do think that.
For sure. And it's funny too, whether you feel like you are surrounded by primarily like nerd culture, like critics, like podcasters and like writers versus like more general critics. Like last night we had a row of folks behind us that were clearly like MCU diehards. And so I heard them like as we were sitting through the credits waiting for the stinger at the end, like they were kind of going deep into the characters, like comics roots and what they thought it was leading to and what they loved about it and what they didn't love about it, but all from like an MCU perspective, which is a little bit easier, I think, to read. But all that said, we are still recording this before like full reviews and Rotten Tomatoes stuff has dropped. So we've seen some early reactions. We've obviously got our early reactions, but we're still kind of in that weird limbo of not knowing how this is going to wind up hitting the general public.
Okay, so let's get into it. First of all, if you're new to this podcast, welcome. We are so happy to have you here. This is going to be an awesome year in the MCU. Actually, awesome 3 years in the MCU. So this is a perfect time to be jumping on to this podcast. So thank you. Please rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast. And we have ways you can get connected. I already brought up Friends from Work Plus. That's a subscription-based thing. But even if you don't want to pay any kind of money, we have all kinds of free outlets to stay connected, including two things I'll highlight, a Discord channel. So if you search Friends from Work on Discord, there's maybe 400 or 500 people on there chatting about the MCU. And it's a pretty cool community, pretty self-regulated and just normal, good people on there. Mm-hmm. And then we also have a newsletter that's free. You can go to our website, theffwpodcast.com, and sign up for our newsletter. It's free. Once a week, you'll get caught up on all the MCU news, but also just film news in general. It's a great way to kind of stay in touch and touch with what's going on. Also, regarding Captain America, obviously, if you're listening to this, we're going to be talking about spoilers for this film. So if you haven't seen the film yet, I highly recommend pausing this podcast and going and watching it first. But if that's the case and you haven't seen yet, we have a lot of episodes that will help prepare you for the film. In fact, you can go check our last maybe month of episodes. Mm-hmm. They're all kind of different ways to approach getting ready for Captain America Brave New World, including a YouTube video that's kind of a 15-minute screen recap of all the events leading up to this movie, which I actually found not only to be really helpful, but proved to be very true. Like the video we made really did prepare you for this movie. So if you haven't seen the other stuff in the MCU, but you want to get caught up in 15 minutes and not watch 20 projects, maybe check out the YouTube video. Otherwise, we have bold predictions and Saga So Far episodes and a mailbag episode taking questions before we had seen this movie. So go catch those before you listen to this and go watch the movie before you listen to this. That's my spiel. I want to structure today's episode a little bit differently than we have in the past. We're going to introduce in these initial reactions episodes what we're calling like our big three. So before we take a break or anything like that, we're going to give you our three main takeaways from our first time watching the film. And then after a break, we can get into all the nitty gritty about the music and little scenes and the acting and all that stuff. But kind of your big three takeaways. Because I saw your review on Blue Sky, and I've already posted a review on Twitter, I think this might be the rare occasion where our three things might be very, very similar. So we'll see how many actual things it is.
Yeah.
But I'll let you start. Kick us off with your first big thing, your first reaction, your first takeaway from Captain America Brave New World last night, seeing it for the first time.
Okay. I really love Sam Wilson as Captain America as much as, I mean, I was not expecting not to. And I recently rewatched Falcon Winter Soldier, and I'll probably talk about that more later too. But he felt settled in as a, both as a character and as an actor. And I just, I really loved how much they leaned into some of the stuff that you and I talked about ahead of the movie that distinguishes him from Steve, like his experience, yes, his background, like not even just looking at like Falcon Winter Soldier focused so much on the difference between like a blonde haired, blue eyed man wielding the shield and a black man.
Right.
But also like the experience, like the kind of world he's grown up in. And most importantly, the fact that he is just a human being.
Right.
That, and I loved seeing that show up in this movie, not just in the context of the Hulk fights, which is where it was kind of discussed a lot ahead of the time. Like the fact that he has like normal people come really close to taking him out because he's just a guy.
How right was I on that front? I was 100% right. Remember I said his three things are listening, de-escalation, and he can see things from a different side. Like they totally leaned into those three attributes. And I'll say that it really wasn't about him. The focal point of the movie was not about him being a black person taking the mantle of Captain America like the other two shows were. Like, really, we did kind of find him as an established Captain America. So I think we hit the nail on the head there. And yes, it worked.
Yeah. It was also nice because I think I saw the director say, I think it was the director, that was, you know, by design. Like, Falcon Winter Soldier was what it was, and that this was that, like, we're going to find him established as Captain America. Now, I think I want to get into later some like holes that I would still like filled in terms of like what that means to people. Like, I think that because this is a different era, like we never really saw Steve Rogers, again, like we talked about before, like working with the US government post like being unfrozen. Like he was working with SHIELD, which is like global. He was working with the Avengers, which was private slash global. And so I'm not like, one thing I would like to see is kind of what exactly that role even means to the average person living within the MCU. But I do think that they did a good job of separating what it means for it to be Sam and not Steve. And I think that was one thing they really needed to nail in a movie like this.
So my first thing is very similar. I think you would probably point out that you're starting with Mackie up here, and I think you would have also probably pointed out Harrison Ford. And I think I'm the exact inverse. So I'll take the lead and say, I thought Harrison Ford was genuinely great in this film.
Yeah.
And I think this is on me. I had a weird reservation that he was kind of going to just phone it in. I think it's his grumpy persona. It's the way he talks about Star Wars and these big franchises that I just kind of assumed this was going to be generic Harrison Ford performance. Like, he's doing it for the paycheck. He will literally tell you that. And I didn't feel that at all. So I guess I was genuinely surprised. Like, for me, I bought almost everything he was selling. I thought he was really into the role.
Yeah.
And I think my favorite story decision of the entire film was to actually kind of twist the character of Ross in a way that I never saw coming. We focus so much on how Ross is power hungry and he wants to be in charge. And I loved that the plot was actually, yes, that's his nature, but he's trying to fight against that, actually. I think by the end, he genuinely did want to change, which is not a route that I thought they were going to take. And so that surprise, partnered with kind of giving him some more humanity from Harrison Ford, I thought was a huge standout for me and was not one of the things I was anticipating being a standout.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I was feeling more optimistic about Harrison Ford because of the things that he'd been saying in the press leading up to it. Like, he just seemed genuinely excited, like that he, or at least like that he had a genuinely good time. And that definitely showed up. And you know, I feel like I read the ending of this movie to suggest that he is not necessarily going anywhere. Like, I think that we are probably going to see him at least one more time in the MCU. I could be wrong, but it seems like he, I mean, everything that I've seen online, people are praising his performance. And if he's into it and he's Harrison Ford, I have to imagine that he's going to come back.
Yeah, I don't know if he'll ever rise to power like that again. Harrison Ford will, but I'm saying Ross, right. I'm not sure he'll ever get that kind of platform again. But I certainly think you might see him again in a cameo role or check in on him in the raft, or maybe he's eventually released and is some kind of player. But it would be kind of weird for him to get back into the government right away. Right.
But he still does have the Hulk in him, right? Isn't that what Sam was saying at the end?
I think so. I'm assuming they're going to kind of work on what that means and maybe try to get rid of it or whatever. But again, that was one of my favorite calls, is I assumed when I saw the trailer that he was secretly the Red Hulk and loved turning into it whenever he could. And just like, but the fact that he didn't really know it was kind of happening and was kind of embarrassed by it in a way, mm-hmm. was kind of refreshing to me. So that actually kind of leads me into my second big point. So we'll snake draft here.
Yeah.
I'll go now with my second big point. There were a few times where I felt like the pacing or the writing was a little bit rushed or just off to where like there were moments that were supposed to hit me bigger than they did. And I was partially thinking about why. And I think it's like, one, I think the movie could have used a little more runtime. That's me.
I agree.
Like,
I agree.
Actually, and I'm not that guy normally, but I actually think it needed 15 more minutes. Like, a mm-hmm. couple examples for me. Like, you know, Isaiah Bradley tries to assassinate Ross, and then all of a sudden they're in the bunker. And I felt like, you know, Sam walks in and Harrison Ford's character is like, yeah, he can be in here. And then within like 30 seconds, he's like, get out. I'm not hearing from you ever again. You are the enemy. And I think I understand what they were trying to do on paper, because like his friend did it.
Yeah.
And he's the one that stood up for Isaiah Bradley and Falcon Winter Soldier. So you also have to be, you know, pay the price. You can't help me on this. But it just was so fast that I was kind of like, wow, I thought he was just asking him to work with him. And now it's like immediately over. There's not enough dialogue to like kind of write in the fact that President Ross is changing his opinion on Captain America. So there's like that kind of thing that happened a few times, not that many. I still liked it, but like that happened a couple of times, like at the very, very end, like the ending happened so fast. And then all of a sudden they're like recapping the events in the hospital where I'm like, I could have used maybe 15 minutes in there for that impact to be more felt. And then the other side of the writing, and I don't know if this is a pacing thing, this might just be a writing thing. There were a few just straight up chemistry things where they're trying to write like the joke or like what they were, how these characters would be interacting.
Yeah.
That just felt a tiny bit off to me, specifically with Torres a few times. I couldn't tell if I am missing something or maybe I'm not the target demographic of this kind of joke or, or something, but something about the pacing and a few dialogue things. In small spots for me, not overall, but just at times left me wanting a little bit more.
I agree. I agree on all that. I think you're right. My second point is going to be similar to yours, just because of where you left it. I will say Danny Ramirez as Joaquin Torres, I thought, given the caliber of actors that he was surrounded by in this movie, I think that, like, I was kind of surprised at how comfortable he seemed in terms of like his performance. But to your point, some of the lines that he was given and even just kind of the role that he has, it was not like it wasn't very well defined. And also, like, I couldn't quite read, like, the scene where he talks about the like gift wrapping being vibranium, and then he's like, oh man, I'm just joking. Like, I was just like,
that's an example of I didn't get it. I didn't get, like, if it was a joke or
And it's not a Danny Ramirez issue there. It's a writing issue, but it is like there were moments like that. I think the other piece for me with the writing, it was just maybe the biggest example I can think of in the MCU of like telling, not showing when it came to exposition. I think one of the things that having recently rewatched a lot of all the Captain America stuff, one thing that Marcus and McFeely have always excelled at, but I think even Falcon Winter Soldier did a better job at, is this, like, we're going to give you information here that, yes, moves the story forward and tells you as the audience what you need to know to understand what's happening. But every line is also going to kind of further a relationship between certain characters and maybe be funny and maybe like tug at your heartstrings. Like, I think about all those scenes in Winter Soldier between Steve and Natasha, where you're kind of getting more background on Natasha while you're also realizing what it's like for Steve to kind of come out of the ice post the first Avengers movie. And you're finding out more about the history of S.H.I.E.L.D. and you're finding out more about how Hydra infiltrated. But all the while, you never really know what's going to happen. Like, I think what's so impressive about a movie like that is whenever I start Winter Soldier, I don't know that Hydra is secretly taking over S.H.I.E.L.D. or has taken over S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, I don't think that that's ever forecasted. The Alexander Pierce thing is a big twist in that movie. And here, because of the writing being a little bit clunkier, I feel like there were no legitimate twists for me within the framework of the movie. Like, I liked the way they handled Ross in terms of like what you're saying, his motivation, like making him not this guy that has like a secret ulterior motive. But in terms of like what's going on with the leader, it all just seemed really straightforward, but often kind of trying to dress it up as a twisty thriller. But it was just like even the writing of the leader was, I think, one of the more disappointing elements for me of Stern's, because I think back to like the best villains in these kinds of movies, like whether you're looking at like Heath Ledger as the ultimate agent of chaos, or even if you're looking at like Alexander Pierce within the like Captain America franchise context, or Zemo is an even better example. Like it's there's this level of like they are always one step ahead. They're so smart. There's a level of kind of wit to it. It's like this like you want to feel like this person is so devious that they're capable of anything. And I just never felt that about the leader, in part because of the way he was written. The whole thing just, it seemed like it was like there was very little like nuance in the screenplay. And I feel like there wasn't much that like made it stand out as even having a real voice. Like it felt like a little bit going through the motions on that, like on that front. And then I think like paired with some kind of choppy editing, like you were saying, it just kind of left it feeling like I could never fully settle in to a scene, like especially. Well, yeah, I think it was like I'm not saying no scene was good by any means, but it's like there's an art to these things, like especially a movie like a Captain America movie that's going to be all this kind of like intrigue and action shots where you need to have moments where you can kind of breathe and collect yourself and then move forward. And I feel like there weren't enough of those. And I don't know if that's an editing or a writing thing, but in general, it almost like it reminded me a lot of the Marvels. From a pacing perspective,
that is so funny. We have not talked about that at all. I was driving from Atlanta to Nashville last night thinking, in some ways, the Marvels is the comp for this movie.
Yeah.
Again, totally different stylistically, but in the ways you're talking about, in like, I remember that movie also felt kind of short. Like we're going just all the time going. That is so funny. And by the way, I was looking up the writers while you're doing that. And then I was looking up the writers for Thunderbolts, but continue.
I think basically we have similar perspectives. I think my larger takeaway there, whenever I'm talking about the pacing and the editing, is I think it just, I like that this movie is trying to be another Winter Soldier, but I think it just shows how difficult it is to pull off what they pulled off with both Winter Soldier and Civil War. Because it's
how difficult it is to be Marcus and McFeely. That's what it shows.
Yeah. I mean, because again, those scripts are so good and they're juggling so many things. And I feel like.
Totally agree. Give them this movie and it's a different outcome.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
If the overall plot is the exact same.
Mm-hmm. Which is why I think we can joke about Thor: The Dark World. Because there it is. That story is absurd. We've said that a million times. But I think that Marcus and McFeely are strong enough script writers to where they kind of hide how absurd the plot is when you're in it. Like you kind of have to sit back and say, wait, what was the convergence before you understand how silly a lot of that was? Totally. But most of the scenes themselves really kind of sing because they've got Hiddleston and Hemsworth both doing great stuff and Anthony Hopkins, and then they're giving them good lines to work with. And I think that was one of the big things here. I feel like the actors that we've already talked about, Carl Umbley is another one that I thought was incredible in this. I think that they shone in spite of the writing normally, it was never they were never given much to work with. Like they're not very memorable lines for me one way or the other.
Yeah. An example that comes to my head right away and hit me in the moment too of show not tell or tell not show in this case is the leader on the voicemail that they play during the Red Hulk transformation. When he's talking to Ross, he says this is what I'm gonna do and this is what I'm gonna do. And then he says, and then your daughter will despise you even more.
Yeah.
And that's does he have to actually clarify that? I think Ross already knows that's what's going to happen if she sees that he's lying or whatever, or doing bad stuff still. It felt so weird to be and then Betty will despise you even more. And then when he finds that general and he says, I'm going to mess with your equilibrium of your ears and then I'm going to stop your heart. And then he does and goes he kills him and says something, and that rubbed me the wrong way. And then when he actually runs into Sam Wilson later, Sam says, yeah, but I have a guy. And he goes, oh, really? Do you? Or it's something I killed him already.
Not anymore or something.
Not anymore. Yeah. And it's okay. Why wouldn't he just let Sam figure that out?
Yeah.
What in the story, what good does it do the leader to tell Sam that guy's dead?
Well, and it also never really made sense to me, what that guy was going to be able to accomplish. Because it's I don't think, if he got in touch with the president and was these pills have gamma radiation, don't take them. I feel like Ross kind of knew that to some degree. I don't think he knew that he was being transformed into a Hulk, but it's I don't really know that that would have. The leader himself is like, well, you can stop taking the pills, but we both know you're not going to. So even that whole subplot of the guy trying to run the pills to ground was kind of, it felt soldered on to me. It was just the other thing is there were so many moments that again, were still good because of the actors involved and because I think the story was good. But there were things where it was just so, for a movie that was so retrospective in terms of following up on the Incredible Hulk and kind of other bits of MCU lore, a lot of it felt it was like from Candace's perspective, which is helpful there when I'm thinking of someone that is not that familiar with all this stuff. I think it was still too much. Like there was still too much being thrown at you if you're not someone that's familiar with the lore. But if you are someone like us that's like really scrubbed in, it didn't really feel that earned because it felt so like shoehorned in often where I'm like, I just like the thing that I am so impressed with whenever I talk about like the Marcus McFeely stuff is they find a way to make these story developments and these lines feel so natural, like it's the natural end of what we've had until that point. And then that's why we started the podcast. You then get to Infinity War and Endgame, and it's like, I both did not predict that this is how this would go and somehow feel like this is the most perfect, natural end to all these things that we've seen like developed over time. And this, it didn't feel like that to me, both like in the macro and the micro. And by that, I mean like in the macro, just the character turns, like we have seen Ross a few times since Incredible Hulk and have never gotten any sense that he was still trying to like win back over his daughter, that there was this like, I mean, I get that we wouldn't have the background about what's going on with Stearns. And again, it's a new movie. They shouldn't be beholden to prior things. It's a new saga. But the difference between this and like prior Captain America films is you would have had those seeds planted, even if like really subtly, so that then whenever you get to Winter Soldier, you've got some of the like Steve Bucky stuff to draw on and continue. And Civil War, like the same thing with Winter Soldier. So here it was like, it makes sense. And I like what you're doing with Harrison Ford's Ross, but I'm not quite, like I'm buying the performance. I'm just not quite buying that he's actually been conflicted this entire time and that this is now like his moment to change, especially because in the micro, like he's just, like when he's standing there talking with Sam and he just, they're talking about like the, I guess it's either right before or right after the assassination attempt. I think right before, but talking about like rebuilding the Avengers maybe. And then there's just this random line about like, I used to take my daughter to see the cherry blossoms. And you're just immediately like, okay, well, we're obviously going to wind up having a moment at the cherry blossoms because like, this is the, like, there's no, that was like the least subtle thing. It doesn't make sense in the context of this conversation. Sam doesn't know anything about your daughter. Y'all don't have this kind of relationship. Like it felt like, okay, we have to get this in there so we can follow it up. And that is what I think separates like a deft hand of a screenwriter from one that's like a little bit more like hack and slash.
I totally agree. Totally agree. I totally agree. I would add, and then you give me your third thing, but I would say that I don't know that I totally agree, but I don't know if I go as far on that scale. Like yeah. I would say like a couple things. Like, for example, Ross, we didn't get any indication about him missing his daughter. Totally agree. But I'm also kind of like, I don't know when we would have gotten that. Like, he's not going to bring it up in the Civil War Accords being like, and by the way, I miss Betty. And also, I think there's a chance that it was a pretty progressive scale. Like, when we found him in Civil War, for example, or Infinity War, he might not have been that far in the journey. Like, he was still on the power journey and not caring as much about Betty. And I think they're trying to lean into, like, you know, he had a heart problem. And so he started just taking these pills that would keep him alive. And then he made a bunch of slow, bad decisions off screen. And so by the time we see him now, he's a lot older and he's reflective on his life and is trying to now change it. And now reflecting on the fact that he misses Betty and like he did make some mistakes. So I agree with you. I just don't know if I'd go as far as maybe the way you're making it sound.
And that's a fair point. I don't want to, like, I recognize that a movie should be able to introduce new elements and like work on teasing out parts of a character that haven't been fully explored. And
but I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying though. Like, we haven't gotten hints that that was a driving factor for him. But I'm also saying it's not that unbelievable to say that he might have started thinking about later in his life, you know, off screen. We haven't had that much time with him. It's not we've seen everything. But I'm with you.
Yeah, I think it's just like, to your earlier point, if you had the exact same plot here and we were committed to having Ross want to kind of turn the corner and be respected by his daughter and rebuild that relationship, I think you could have had that and really everything else here without me feeling the stuff if you had just, if we had had more moments to kind of, again, to breathe and to feel that more organically, where it's not Ross saying, I miss my daughter. Have you heard from my daughter? Like, I hope that my daughter still loves me and sees me as a good man. Like,
Dude, I agree.
But
there is a lot of that. Even from Anthony Mackie in Captain America, there were times where he had to just say it out loud. And it's like, I know what you mean. You don't have to say it. Okay, yeah. What's your third point? I think I'm with you. Like, I think the acting was actually across the board really good, and the writing across the board was not great. Even the overarching plot wasn't crazy, you know, genius or something. It was pretty standard. The Japanese prime minister and Ross's interactions were also like too on the nose. He'd be like, well, you're doing this. And he'd be like, no, I'm not. Well, if you're not doing it, then who is? And it's like, would they actually talk that way to each other? I'm not sure. So that's where I'm with you as well. However, I do think there were some things that still worked. So don't take I thought the whole thing was like that. But there were just moments where I'm sitting in the theater going like, oh, that's that. But
yeah.
What's your third thing? I want to end on a positive third thing.
Yeah. Same. I guess kind of similar to my first when I was talking about just liking the kind of human Sam Wilson as Captain America. I think in general, this makes me excited for where we're heading in the coming months, like specifically in the next like 3 months, just because I think we will have Daredevil, which can kind of operate in a similar universe, even though it's going to be New York and not DC, and then Thunderbolts that'll kind of follow up. We've talked about that a lot. And I think it's not like I was always excited about the ground level stuff, but I think what I do like that they're doing here is you see the first real attempt, gosh, maybe period post Endgame. I'm trying to think. I'm sure I'm missing something, but the first movie that is actively interested in bringing together bits of things from other projects and tying them up and showing people what they mean. Like, obviously, the Tiamat stuff was huge to this movie. The Adamantium stuff was huge. Yeah, like, I love, even though I don't know that it always, like, sometimes it felt a little bit like someone just dumped their favorite, like, MCU toys on the ground and then kind of, like, scattered them to play with for this movie. But they're still fun toys, and I'm glad that, like, it feels like we're in a shared universe again in a way that I don't think it has much at all. Like even in the MCU, like the post in-game MCU's best points, it hasn't really felt like that.
Right. Even though there weren't cameos, not only just the main actors that are being brought back. So like seeing Stearns and seeing Ross, like that gives you connectivity. But yes, there were all kinds of the Bucky cameo and a reference to Bruce and Betty and Tiamat and Adamantium and Vibranium and the Wakandans are a reclusive country. And, you know, there were a lot of those that kind of just go, oh yeah, we are in the shared universe. I'm with you. I'm actually happy you brought that up because my third overarching point is actually different. So this is where we kind of differ.
Oh, nice.
Not in that I disagree with that point. I really enjoyed the overarching vibe and tone that was created in the film. So I'm going to give two shout outs. I think I enjoyed the direction and like the cinematography from what, like the writing that the director had to work with. I enjoyed that. And I thought that Laura Cartman did a really good job in that, in the same way that when Winter Soldier came along, musically, they kind of dropped the anthem type thing that Sylvester had created for Captain America and kind of went with this more atmospheric thing. I thought you did a good job just creating an atmosphere of tension without ever having to hit the like the brave the Falcon Winter Soldier theme. Dun, 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 dun. Like she didn't have to hit that ever. It was more just kind of creepy music. And so there were just some shots and some music parts where I was like, I'm into this tone. The shot of Captain America and Isaiah Bradley talking to each other and some of the direct face shots, but then also some
of the
corner angles where you saw the glass, like the way they walked into some rooms looked pretty cool. And then I'm also going to say in general, I thought the action was pretty cool and actually something I looked forward to. So the cinematography of how they handled it, how long it went, like I'll even throw that in to say, I thought the actual hulking out was awesome. It was cool to have like a pissed off Hulk again. And it actually felt like a terrifying experience, especially for someone like Sam, who's totally outclassed. It was pretty short. So I think like the direction and the music were a win for me.
Yeah. I was going to say we can talk about music after the break, but I think this is a good time to knock it out. I am torn on that. And I really have been like, I've been refreshing Spotify this morning because I know that the soundtrack's supposed to release and I'm curious to listen to it because there were points in the movie where I was really happy with it. I think in general, like the score itself, I really enjoy. And I think it's going to be one that I like listening to. Candace, for her part, as we were leaving last night, highlighted that she liked the music. Laura Cartman's a friend of the show. I have been pretty impressed by her stuff, both within the MCU and outside of it. So I'm not surprised that she did good work here. I think for me, there were scenes where the music did the same thing that I'm kind of complaining about, like some of the editing and the writing, where it just felt a little like choppy and disjointed. And I'm not really sure that that is Cartman's fault. I think it's more, again, an editing thing. But like, for instance, the opening scene with Ross, I guess that's his like election party, I think, whenever he's like coming out on stage. And like that scene, there is this kind of like, there's like a beat, like kind of a busy thing going on in the background as that's happening. And there's a world where that's kind of a rising tension.
No, I kind of liked it.
That's what I'm saying. I could be totally off here. But for me, it felt like I missed a little bit of the atmosphere that you would get in something like Zimmer's Dark Knight score, where like you've got that tension. But it's a tension where it's like drawn out.
You're remembering that differently. I don't think that specific scene, you're right in what you're saying. I don't think. It is that. It is like a Dark Knight kind of thing going on there. I think.
Maybe we both
saw it one time last night.
I'll go back and listen. If that's which is why I'm not going to have a hot take one way or the other. I was not like, there were just a couple things where it didn't feel like it was all clicking together correctly. And it's not an issue with the stuff that Laura was composing.
Sure.
It just, again, feels like it's not like, I don't know, again, like rewatch. Like, I know that we've gone back and forth on Henry Jackman as a composer, but I really think he nailed both of the Captain America movies in the way where it's like you can sort of have that space for things to breathe, even just musically. And then you have the like kind of chaos of the Winter Soldier theme. And to me, it just felt like a lot of this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. The music, it was a little more chaotic.
That's fair. Because I think I would say I'm a little bit different than you in that I don't need to listen to it on Spotify. I think it sets the mood right on like in the theater, but I'm not sure that that's like there were any kind of anthems that I would tend to latch on to or musical moments that I'm like, I need that on repeat in my car. So yeah. I'm with you in that I feel like it, for the most part, created the right vibe, but I can see what you're saying. It missing a few things here or there. Okay. This podcast is brought to you by organicpricebooks.com. They are our comic partner. Robbie, are there any good comic news things we need to check out? Organicpricebooks.com, promo code friends from work. What are you reading these days, by the way?
Actually, if you enjoyed this movie, if you didn't enjoy it as much, kind of wherever you fall, I think if you're interested in a Captain America movie that's doing the, or a Captain America story that's doing the kind of political thriller thing well, I have been going back and reading Ta-Nehisi Coates' Captain America run from a couple of years ago, which I basically missed at the time. And I've really enjoyed it. It's a run that I've heard kind of like mixed reviews on from different folks. So I think it's one of those where it either works or doesn't. Mm-hmm. But it's got all the kind of hallmarks of this slash the Winter Soldier vibe, like who is pulling the strings. You've got like an assassination attempt on Thaddeus Ross in the story. So it's like there's a lot of carryover. It's not a Sam Wilson story. It's a Steve Rogers story. But it's really well done. It's really fun. That, I believe, is still on Organic Price Books right now, so you can go and get that and use our promo code. There are also, and we'll talk about this more in the coming weeks, but a lot of Daredevil and Fantastic Four things that you should be on the lookout for. So if you're looking for comics that will kind of fit into your 2025 Marvel goals, you should go to Organic Price Books,
which we'll be shifting gears to almost immediately. We'll have some time to reflect on this movie, but we're going to start making a screen recap for Daredevil and a saga so far for Daredevil. And then it's March 4. So that's less than a month away. So it'll be kind of turning the page quickly. OrganicPriceBooks.com, promo code friends from work. We'll be right back after a quick word from these sponsors. Okay, so I want to get into some of the little nitty-gritty things regarding the MCU plot lines and stuff like that. But I just got to say, I was going to the bathroom during that commercial break, and I was thinking about how, you know, the writers for this show or this movie also wrote for Falcon Winter Soldier and a few other things. And so that kind of makes sense. Like, it does kind of carry over that similar vibe and tone in the writing.
Although Thunderbolts is a lot more space in Falcon Winter Soldier, to your point earlier about needing a little bit more time.
Yep, good point. But the writers for Thunderbolts worked on Ragnarok and Black Widow and the show Beef. And so I'm pretty confident. My early prediction is that, you know, this movie is going to land around 60% critic. I'm pretty sure that Thunderbolts is going to land like 75% critic, almost just because of the writing. I'm so like, if you go back and watch Black Widow, there is none of the problems that we just talked about in that movie that we just talked about from Brave New World. I think that movie is one of the most misunderstood films in the entire MCU. I will die on that hill. I think it's close to a tier one film. The only problem Black Widow has is that there are two shots at the end of the movie that don't look very good CGI wise. And so people use them on Twitter as like bait to be like, look how stupid this is. And they're literally a total of 3 seconds in the entire film. So that's the first thing. And I will die on the hill that if the final act had taken place in a bunker and not a floating, like, whatever, mansion, fortress, that movie's a 90% film, dude. The writing in Black Widow is phenomenal. It's funny. It's heartfelt. It's moving. And it never feels rushed. It never feels boring. So, like, I will die on the Black Widow hill. The only other thing I'll say is if that movie had come out in chronological order, like, I think by the time it came out, there was a sentiment of, like, well, it's taken them so long, so now this is pointless. And we know she's dead already, so it's pointless. If that had come out around Black Panther era, that movie is a 90%, man. And so I'm excited about Thunderbolts because I think that the Thunderbolts writers know what we're talking about a little bit more.
I am right there with you. And I think, I feel like, you know, my hot take is if you're looking for the spiritual successor to Captain America Winter Soldier, it is Black Widow, not Brave New World. Like,
dude, the beginning of Black Widow with the girls, but then also the plane escape is so freaking dope. Well,
and, like all there are so many great moments, like exactly what I'm talking about, Marcus and McFeely doing so well, like kind of moving the ball forward. Like there are some great twists in Black Widow that like work for me. Me on a first watch and still work.
Why do people not like that movie more?
It's strange. I do think it's such a timing thing, but I think, and you know, it's such a weird release and, you know, and the Disney lawsuit, from Scarlett Johansson around all that. Like, I think maybe people just didn't.
Who is now like totally settled all that because she's like working with Disney. Like she's executive producing stuff.
No, but I think, and not even the lawsuit itself. I just mean like, I think that it was a weird moment for Marvel to kind of come back with a new movie. Cause it's like, it's after, you know, years of people waiting and it's a movie that is actually set before Endgame and, you know, a lot of people were still quarantined and whatever, but I totally agree.
I think when you reflect on Brave New World, it's kind of funny. Like, I think it's kind of, to quote, I'm blanking. It's an NFL coach. Oh no, I should know this. Dennis Green. To quote Dennis Green, this movie was what we thought it was. They are who we thought they were. The movie was kind of exactly what I thought Brave New World, honestly. Like, it did some stuff really well and it was fun. I had a good time at the theater, especially with Billy. Shout out Billy again. I had a great time in the theater. I thought it looked good and sound good and it was a cool return to the grounded side of things. And my ear's cutting out, sorry. The grounded side of things and all of that. But it did feel like there were some things that this was the very, very, very tail end of the final kind of old regime, the writer's strike, the COVID era. This felt like the very, very Chapek era, the very final stamp. And it really does feel like if I had to pause, I would say that Thunderbolts, maybe not even Daredevil because of the way they redid Daredevil, which again, I think it's gonna be amazing, but I think that Thunderbolts is the line where it's like, this is the new era that they could have canceled Thunderbolts if they didn't believe in it. Like they weren't beholden to it.
Yeah.
Like it's not like affected by the strikes as much. I think Thunderbolts and Fantastic Four are where we're going totally forward. Wow. That was a crazy rant. I want to talk about the minute things too, but whatever.
But I do to like wrap that up. I totally agree. And in fairness, like we said this on the podcast not long ago, and I made sure to say to Candace as the lights were going down in the theater last night, like, just so you know, like, this is the one that I'm not totally sure on. The other two movies that are set for this year,
I'm pretty
very high expectations. And I think that was about right. Like, I think I came in, like, there were things that I had a lot of fun watching it, as I feel like it would be hard not to have fun with certain elements of this if you're an MCU fan. But I think the encouraging thing for me, too, is
it only gets better from here.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Which is a great way to transition into the final chunk of the discussion here.
Okay, let's just rapid fire some stuff. Just you and me from our notes, rapid fire. Yeah. The vibranium suit is pretty dope. Seeing all the suit uses and the shield uses, I thought
and
was
the, like,
magnificent.
And the Black Panther like kinetic storage
correct
stuff,
like,
yeah.
Not just seeing that this is a suit that was made by Wakanda and the only difference is that it's stronger or something, but actually see that they worked in the vibranium kinetic energy stuff and the uses of that, like as an explanation of how he can withstand a punch from the Hulk while still feeling the effects of it. Like I love that one time the Hulk punches him and he looks at the wing like, and he says like, oh my gosh, this is like, I haven't felt
that forever. Shaking with
again. So it's showing the power level difference, but it's also showing how cool the tech is. So I thought that was like a huge win. And just jump in. I'm going to just rapid fire, in if you think something.
We can alternate here. I thought that the actual Hulk fight, like especially when it was kind of grounded in the White House, was so fun. Like it was the first time we've seen a Hulk
so cool.
Like, because even in Ragnarok, right, like, you see Hulk being Hulk.
Correct.
But it's kind of like what people have talked about with Ant-Man, Quantumania versus the other ones, where you lose a little bit of the scale for Ant-Man whenever you're in kind of an alternate dimension. And I think there's a little bit of that with Hulk and Ragnarok, where it's just like, you're not getting that, like, he's right. busting pipes and everything.
Right. This is Avengers Helicarrier Hulk. That's the last time we saw that.
And it was just like such a great, like and I was legitimately. And a character
who didn't want to turn into the Hulk. So it's just him raging.
And just like the president being caught in a press conference, turning into the Hulk and then literally destroying the White House was just like a really, it was a fun idea. And I thought that they executed that part of it really, really perfectly.
Yeah, there was that shot in the trailer of the White House kind of being bisected or dissected at a diagonal line. And what they didn't show us in the trailer was that it's the Hulk ramming Captain America through the building. And I thought that looked so sick. Like there were things like that that were cool.
I was like, man, they just repaired the Washington Monument.
I know.
Post Homecoming. You're gonna tear it up again?
A lot of property damage. Shout out Kirk Cousins. but I noticed, I was watching that too, and I noticed that he just kind of breaks a few bricks. They're intentional to show that it doesn't like all collapse.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the bricks are repairable.
I think it's really just the White House that he
The White House is not repairable. it's going down.
Okay, yeah, your next one.
I'm Pavlov's dogs. I get chills when I hear the word the Avengers. And they had cut that out of the trailer. Yeah. So there were a couple things in the trailer that were misleading, and I think in a good way. Like when Ross says you're not Steve Rogers, Anthony Mackie doesn't say I'm not. You're right.
I'm not. Yeah, I noticed that. Because they had that in every TV spot and trailer.
Well, and in the trailer they have Ross saying, I need Captain America. And in the movie it was the Avengers. And that I'm just triggered by that word. And so even at the very end when he says like he wants me to form the Avengers, I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, what does that even look like? What does that mean? I know that's stupid MCU fan of me, you know, like that's not film critic me. That's just like, oh, I heard.
Oh, yeah, but that's the fun of these movies. And that's what I mean whenever I'm saying like just the shared universe of it gets me excited because we're finally even though a lot of it is very explicit in the like exposition style, I still like that it is being made explicit. Like, we don't have an Avengers team. Like, there's a hole here that I think is also setting up Thunderbolts pretty perfectly. My question on that front, what was your take on Bucky's role here?
Okay, so I love the Bucky reveal. I loved...
Yeah.
I kind of went like, yes, in the theater. Oh, yeah. And I'm not like the biggest Bucky guy, so shout out Katrina. But I was like, let's go, there's Bucky. And then Billy's like, man, he's looking good. I'm like, yeah, he's looking good. Did we know he was in government? Like, that's news, right?
I don't think so. I mean, again, I'm sure it gets hard sometimes because...
He pulled an Andrew Garfield in that... He specifically lied that he's not in the film, which I kind of love because he wanted to save that reveal. But then he also must know that it has to tie into his role in Thunderbolts. And so is he working for Val to actually like governmentally put together a team?
I mean,
you know, like we'll get into that in a little bit, but.
No. But that like that was one of the big questions for me. Like I just watched Falcon Winter Soldier, like finished it right. Like yesterday before we went to the theater. And yeah, I mean, that's the last time we've heard anything about Bucky, I'm pretty sure. And there's no indication that he is going to be getting into government. And then I think what threw me off was, you know, the trailer for Thunderbolts, which we haven't even really talked about yet.
We're going to do an episode on.
But that one, like, he very much seems to be operating as the kind of ex-Winter Soldier, like, super soldier military guy. Like it, you don't get the sense there that he is some like new lease on life politician Bucky. So I'm curious how those two things link up.
I think they can fill that gap appropriately. Yeah. I don't think it's like out of left field. I mean, Soldier, like you said, you saw him kind of making amends and like coming to terms with it. So
yeah, it is. I mean, like it's out of left field, but not in a bad way. Like
we just don't know his role in Thunderbolts yet. Like maybe he's not fighting that much.
I mean, it seems like he's, it's weird that we haven't gotten any shots of him. Like even his hair is like longer, I think, in Thunderbolts. Like he looks a little bit more like a Winter Soldier to where I'm even like, is, yeah, like does something like is he going to be an acting congressman in that movie?
Yeah.
Because it would be weird to change the status quo and then just immediately undo it. So I would have to think so.
They said in this movie he was running for congressman, right?
Yeah, she said future congressman. Yeah,
I can't remember. Okay.
And I'm not sure if that, I think that was the phrase. And I don't know if that means he's been elected. I guess it would mean like we're 5 months post-presidential election in the movie. So I guess he would be running.
Okay, I liked that there was an ex-Black Widow tie-in. I don't know anything about that character or if it's from comics or anything, but I just liked hearing that word. And I like whenever the characters within a film treat certain other things with respect. And so like, I like them being like, oh man, she's a ex-Black Widow, look out. There was something about that. I'm like, good. Like that kind of, it kind of like weirdly puts an emphasis on Natasha and Yelena in a way that I enjoy.
I agree. I felt the same way about the Wakanda references, kind of tracing what you and I talked about ahead of time. Like,
now, what's interesting is I'm not sensitive about vibranium, though. So, like, vibranium is the only thing where that doesn't really apply. Like, for example, we talk about Tony Stark tech. You know that I don't love whenever somebody comes along in the movie and goes like, oh, Stark tech, I can beat that, or this is way more advanced, or... because it kind of belittles, although eventually it's going to get passed up, right? Obviously. But like, you know what I'm saying? The only thing I'm not sensitive about that with, because I'm sensitive about that with like the Infinity Stones and the timeline and all this stuff, is vibranium. For some reason, I'm okay and actually excited about this adamantium thing. And, and it doesn't like bother me for them to say, this is a stronger metal. That for some reason gets me really fired up.
No, and I think that that's like, I think it's about kind of what you and I were talking about in either our mailbag or like Saga So Far episode. Like I think that they are going to lean into vibranium being the more like versatile metal that is also like essentially indestructible, and then adamantium being, I love the line that like kind of cracked me up was it's even more indestructible than vibranium. Where I'm like, can it be more indestructible? Like, isn't it either indestructible or destructible? So I like that they're leaning into it.
I'm Robbie and I know how to write movies. Oh.
I'm just saying, can't they have said like, it's even like use some language to talk about the like rigidity of it, or
it's as strong as vibranium, if not stronger.
Yeah, like I just think that like it's one of those things where it's like that's even more perfect, and it's like, well, not can't be did, more perfect. It's either perfect or it's not
okay.
Perfect.
All right, me. Didn't you find a couple of lines funny though? There were a couple times where I felt like some of the writing worked. No. Like I liked at the very end when he's like, well, that didn't work. Should have taken the serum. Yeah. Bucky was full of, you know.
Yeah, no, I did love that. I speaking of, before we move on entirely, I love the adamantium stuff, and I love the way that they deal with the Celestials. I also liked that I liked that conversation between Sam and Bucky. Again, I think it probably could have been a tad tighter dialogue wise, but I really like the thrust of it. I like the idea of Steve being like someone that or Sam being the Captain America that people can aspire to, between like that and the conversation with Joaquin.
Yes.
That stuff, all like that to me is the theme of the movie that I think like the movie's at its best when it's leaning into that. Also,
and like the joke after I thought was good too. Like your screenwriters write that, or your script writers. And he's like, just a little bit of
little
that
emotion.
Yeah. I thought that was all fun, but I'm totally with you that there was like one line I remember. I can't remember it now in the theater going like, that was a little on the nose, like Bucky, like too, it was too much. Like, you know, Steve gave you that shield so that you could, it, like, I don't know. There was one time where I'm like, oh
yeah,
I felt a little unsettled, but in general, I love everything on paper, right? Like I love the actors. I love what you're trying to communicate.
Yeah.
I'm excited about the cameo. I love the joke at the end. So all of it I love. And then there's like one time where I'm like, ooh, I would have probably tweaked that in the editing room.
Yeah,
as far
yeah,
as what that line said.
The line from the one that I remember is when Bucky's like, say what you need to say in a way that just felt a little like, maybe, I mean, I don't know. Like the fun thing about, to step back for a second, the fun thing about this podcast for me and the reason we started it, and I always have to remind myself of this whenever we're reviewing new things. We did not get into this to like rate and critique these movies. We got into it because it's fun to tease out the things that we love and the connections and then to kind of chart that course. And for me, like it's easy to get lost in these little things that I would tweak and change. And I know I'm like nitpicking, but it's still like when you stand back, like I really like what they are doing and how it's being positioned. And I like the growth of that relationship with Sam and Bucky. That's just like you said, it was something that I was kind of entirely ruling out because Sebastian Stan said he wasn't in it and he's about to be in the very next one as like the, you know, one of the leads. But I really like, I like what they're doing with it. And it's just like, it is fun to see things moving forward in an interesting way. Like I was not prepared for Bucky to show up with like a suit and an American flag pinned on it. And I think that's a really interesting status quo change because Bucky was an international fugitive like 10 years ago. And now he's, you know, apparently going to be in Congress or is trying to be in Congress.
The equivalent is like Fisk running for mayor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a status quo change. That's small, but I'm excited to explore it. All right. I have two final things.
Cool.
I did get chills the very first time, the very first mind control thing with, it felt very similar to the siren song thing in Wakanda Forever that I loved. There was an eeriness to the music playing and then immediately everyone just standing up and shooting people.
And the Mr. Blue.
Yeah. Like the fact that was the song was clever, well thought out. And I think as more and more of the leader was revealed, you felt that a little less. But for a while there, I thought the mind control thing was pretty
yeah.
like haunting in a cool way.
Agreed.
Like Madison. A little scary and then fun, but then actually kind of creepy.
And then kind of cool. No, I think that's right.
Gosh, I love Madison.
I think the stuff with the leader that I think is fun. Is more in kind of the potential moving forward. Like one thing I was thinking about last night, we've had the raft in place since Civil War, but we've really only ever gotten references to it, after the scene where we see Steve break them out. We just kind of, I think in Falcon Winter Soldier, they talk about how Zemo is going to go to the raft. And I think maybe that's one of the only other mentions we've gotten, but the comics fan in me, especially as we're like entering this era that we've talked about a lot of the kind of ground level, like Dark Avengers, like Bendis stuff that I think we're getting in Thunderbolts. I can't help but think of one of the more famous Bendis Avengers stories, which is called Breakout. It's what like launched his new Avengers book that kind of changed the face of Marvel Comics for a decade. And the whole premise of that story is like all of the big bads, like, you know, almost all of them are locked up in the raft at the start of that run. And then there's a malfunction in that story. I think it's actually Electro like disables all of the very similar to
the Spider-Man video game with Doc Ock.
Oh, true. Yeah. And so then everybody gets out and the Avengers have to it's the new Avengers because they band together and then have to go hunt down all these villains, which is a really fun premise. And it's really like, this is the first time I've thought that we could ever get something like that. Cause we're now sort of seeing a raft filled with even just the fact that Ross and Stearns are in there is already moving it towards a, like, we've got some really powerful, really dangerous people locked up here. And so I, you know, you and I have talked forever about like, let's have villains stick around. Let's not do like these one and dones. And I think that this is finally Marvel like moving in that direction. Like, I think, is the leader going to be pivotal to Secret Wars? Almost certainly not. But I think now we're starting to see like villains populate this world in the same way that we've seen heroes populate it. And I think that that's a win.
I am thankful they didn't kill him at the end or something. Final thought from me. There has never been a more tacked on scene. I would stake my life, my life savings on the post-credit scene being part of the reshoots.
Yeah.
I would stake my life. If it's not, I would be stunned. I guarantee you that was Marvel calling saying, people are needing some connectivity. Just get him back in the raft for a second and talk about it. And so in that way, that post-credit stinger was so forced and so funny because it's such a interesting explanation that the leader, knowing his probabilities, is starting to think about the multiverse. Like there's a lot that's kind of, you have to stretch there. Okay. I would add that even all those things being true, it was kind of fun for me to hear like a little bit of a shout out towards where they're going, because I was the one that was saying, as grounded as it is, can you give me some kind of connectivity to the multiverse saga, or is this just going to feel so out of left field that this has nothing to do with what, you know, Far From Home, or not Far From Home, No Way Home, and Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness, and Loki season one and two, or hinting at, honestly, even the different kind of like realms of Moon Knight. It's kind of all living in this other basket. And if we have this one movie that is so not in that basket, is it going to almost feel weird to not have anything? And so they were thinking of me and they put that in there. It is, I'm saying two things. It feels a little out of place, but I also kind of was like, okay, I'm excited about like, he needs an Avengers team because this thing is coming.
No. And I do like that. Like I did not, I thought the scene was, again, I think reflective of the writing across the board in this movie, which was just like, okay, a little heavy-handed. Like there's a world where we maybe could have, like I think the gold standard for a scene like this to me is like the Winter Soldier stinger that kind of preps for Age of Ultron. You know, like there's nothing more terrifying than a miracle. This kind of like, oh, what's going to happen? Who are these people? Like, this is unnerving. And this was a little bit more like, I have done all of the math and now I know that we have a multiverse on our hands and that's going to be pretty bad. And then it's like, okay, like
I agree. But again, a little bit have some grace for the fact that that's clearly the character of the leader. Like they're like, he is this probability, like socially weird math guy. So I buy it a little bit more that his dialogue would be that way.
But I know
what you're saying.
But I just think that, but regardless, I agree with you. And I think that like the thing that I like about it is, one, it shows that they recognize that we need the kind of unifying like plot line, I guess. But also, I think more importantly for me, I like now knowing how Sam Wilson is going to come into that, because I feel like a lot of the press around this movie has been like, Sam is Captain America. He is going to be the leader of the Avengers moving forward. Like, we are going to get a lot of Sam Wilson between now and the end of the multiverse saga. And I was never in doubt that that would work, but I was also kind of like, how do these things even start to link up? And so to your point, I like that at least now Sam is like nervous about it, kind of in the same way that like Scott is. And that seems to make sense to me, because they're the two of the players in the MCU that go back the furthest at this point. And so that kind of makes sense how like Sam could be nervous about the multiverse and then talk to Scott, and Scott could kind of confirm his experience with Kang. And so like I'm seeing the way that these like seemingly disparate elements could connect. And in that sense, I was grateful for the stinger there.
Okay. No doubt. I mean, that's about all I had. We're going to have a lot of time to reflect on this and how it sets up the next projects. And like I said, the next projects are coming really quickly. I think, you know, we typically kind of grade the movie overall at a different time, but I feel like this consensus is both of us would probably say it's like a tier three movie. Like, I don't think either of us would say tier one and not tier four. So the kind of question, I'd have to look at our list, but does it fall like towards the very top of the third tier or towards that bottom of that second tier kind of thing is kind of where I'm thinking. I also would like to see it again. I'm going next week with my wife, who's not seen it yet, as kind of our Valentine's Day celebration. And so I would like to see it through her eyes. And I would like you to go with someone, not Candace. and once some of those concerns are down, if any of that changes at all for you.
Yeah.
Before we really reflect it.
You know, one question that I have
for
listeners and for you, I guess, in the moment.
Yeah.
I'm really curious. Like some of the, when I think of the more polarizing recent Marvel films, they are all kind of like out there. Like Love and Thunder, Multiverse of Madness, Eternals, Quantumania. They're all very different movies, but they are all doing things that I could imagine someone that is a fan of like classic MCU stuff sitting down and being like, like that's a little much.
You're gonna say.
But this is not really out there, you know. So I'm curious, like how it hits the same folks that were not into some or all of those movies. Like,
wouldn't you say that this story was way smaller than maybe even we anticipated? Like, the story was the leader wanted revenge on Ross specifically. He didn't want to take over the world. He wasn't trying to, he was mad at Ross. And even like the airplane fight around the Celestial, we never went to Celestial Island. We never actually saw the harvesting. We never saw the futuristic things it could do with it. It was actually two jets on two jets, and that was it. The war never started. It was about a peace treaty. So in general, I think it was way smaller. So to your point, it's going to be fascinating to see what the score is when it comes out. This is why I said 60% critic, 80% audience, because like, I think I just tend to appreciate the movies more that do the big swings and fail. Like I'm a bigger fan, I think, of the Marvels, and I'm definitely a bigger fan of Quantumania than like I'm a way bigger fan of Quantumania than the average person. And I think it's because I just really appreciate the creativity and the big swing that it takes. But to your point, this is the exact opposite. In my opinion, this is like they were swinging for a single.
Yeah.
Like this is like just trying to get it out to right field, a gentle little blooper. Like they didn't try anything outrageous and I think they hit a single. Like I think they got what they shot for. And so for the people that were wanting that, again, that's why I think I saw so many positive reactions last night. There were a lot of positive reactions once the social media embargo lifted. It's because I think there is a brand of MCU fan that just wants to kind of get back to these small swings, and it's just fun to be on the grounded level again and hear these connectivity things. And so they can look past writing things because it's Captain America and the Hulk again, and like we know this stuff. And I think there's going to be a majority of people that want that. Like that, I think that's why the 80% audience score. But I think there's going to be film critics, like Candace, who has no investment in this, is just viewing it as, how is it as a film? It's not spectacular as a film. Like, and I actually saw someone else really didn't like it. And someone we know, Dave Gonzalez, the book writers from our friends from the reign of the MCU, he really didn't like it. Like he did like sad trombones, like wah, wah, wah.
Yeah.
And it's like, that kind of all makes sense to me. Like if you are looking for it to be like a award-winning film, it's definitely not that. And that's because it's not even really setting out to be, if that makes sense. Like Quantumania tried to be, and then people didn't think it was, but it's trying to do something way different.
No, I think I
appreciate that more. I think I like that more is my point. Well, I'd rather you do the craziness for my genre. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I think for me, I like that this, I think it's a perfect, well, Well, like we said earlier, I think it's a good way to start the year off. Like, I think if this had been like, if I had felt about Deadpool and Wolverine, for instance, the way that I felt about this, I think we would have been in a tough spot as MCU fans. But I think this is a great kind of on-ramp to the next couple months. I have a lot of faith in Thunderbolts. Maybe that's going to wind up being misplaced. But at this point, I everything I see about that movie makes me more excited. And I think that like this kind of whets people's appetite for that genre. And maybe even does some like, you know, in a clunky way, but some table setting to where it's like there are a lot of lines in this movie about the post blip and we find out about the Celestial and it's chaotic out there and we need Avengers. And it's like, in a lot of ways, it felt like this was a collection of like exposition dumps. But I think that that allows a movie like Thunderbolts to come in and not have to do that, which I think is important. And can be have far further reaching impacts beyond just this movie.
Even with these exposition dumps, this is never a movie that I'd be like, oh, don't watch it because I'm ashamed of it. Like, it's not like one of these where I'm like, oh, I don't know. Like, I'd be like, Dad, you're going to like it. Just watch it. And I don't think it's perfect. And it's set, but it sets a table. And I swear this is my last thing. And I know that there's a running joke on this podcast that I say last thing like with 40 minutes to go. And then we go for another 40 minutes. That's how much I love talking to you about this stuff. But would you say that Deadpool and Wolverine was, quote, a big swing? Yes or no? Like in the way we're talking about Quantumania.
That's a good question. I would say no, but in part because, I mean, it was a very safe thing to put Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman together. Like that was a guaranteed box office win. I think that there are elements within the movie that in a vacuum would look like a big swing in the MCU context, but the fact that Deadpool had already been a massively successful franchise means that like they weren't really nervous about making a bunch of like off-color jokes because they know that people expect that from a Deadpool movie. So I
totally agree. And I wonder if that's getting to the bottom of some of this preference stuff we talk about, because I think Deadpool and Wolverine is a perfect example of a small swing. They tried to hit a double, but it's the best possible version of it. I mean, it's a double off the wall and it was crushed. It was a line drive right into the wall. Like it's as good, but it really isn't taking that many bold steps outside of like what you're saying, just being really crass.
Yeah.
But even that's not as bold when you factor in his history. Like everyone knew it was going to be crass. So that's not like pushing the envelope really. You know what I'm saying? It's not pushing the envelope in the same way that Quantumania is trying. And I think that's what my preference is. Like I don't look back and I haven't rewatched Deadpool and Wolverine. I think in some ways Guardians 3 is that way. Like, I don't know that it was the biggest swing. Like it kind of was a safe Guardian story. And I'm not saying that's bad. Like those movies people love, but preference wise, I think I would always err on the side of someone that tried to hit a home run and they hit a triple or a double.
Yeah.
Than someone who tries to hit a double and hits a double or tries to hit a single and hits a double. Maybe. I just like the movies. I'm like, wow, this is zany and wild. And they mostly get it, you know?
Yeah. Which I think like Love and Thunder is that for me as people
which is kind of why I think I've come around. Like I kind of like it for the most part.
Yeah. Like, because, there are scenes that don't quite click, but in general.
And there's stuff I would change for sure. So I'm not saying it's perfect.
But it's doing some really interesting stuff.
Love and Thunder tried to be
a
home run and it hit a double.
Yeah. I think what I'm excited about here and just in general is the MCU is unique primarily because of the like revolutionary connected storytelling that it was doing. Like we've never had that before ever in the history of film franchises where you had like interlocking franchises that were all building in a certain direction. And I think that when you don't have that happening, you lose a huge chunk of like the MCU's value to fans. Because it's like you can have the best single movies all around. They could all get 90%, you know, whatever. But if you're not feeling a trail from one to the next, that's not the MCU. Like that was the whole genius of what like Feige and them came up with back in phase one. And so I think just the fact that we have that back in it now and that piece is kind of reestablished now makes me think like, okay, now add on the taking big swings within that framework. And I think we're really cooking, because that's when you get Civil War and Infinity War and
Endgame. And hopefully Fantastic Four.
And yeah, exactly. Which
that's a perfect example, I hope, of like the 60s aesthetic, the casting that you don't necessarily think would be the casting. Like yeah. You're taking a big swing on actors and you're going in on the vibe and the aspect ratio. And like, and so like, yeah. I'm teed up, like I'm ready. And I'm just praying that that is then also, because if they then knock it out of the park, that's when you're winning awards. That's yeah, the WandaVision.
And I think it's well timed, because I think if Fantastic Four had come out like a year ago, it would have been a little, it would have been confusing, because I don't think people have a clear enough sense of what the quote unquote 616 like timeline is anymore.
Right.
But now we're going to have this, which really sets it up.
Correct.
Thunderbolts, Daredevil, just like leaning into all that. And so now, yeah, we can go to a different timeline with Fantastic Four and we have the right context.
You're so right, and that's why it's so important for the MCU. Everything we're saying, like Brave New World is just an okay movie, but it's kind of setting the table for all the people who wanted to get back to this vibe. Like now they have it. So like yeah. You got that. Like it's still like that's why it's still worth putting out. Cuz yeah. It is following up on all those things and it's setting the table. And it's a pretty good version of that. But then I think it's setting the table, like you said, for Daredevil to be bold and awesome, for Thunderbolts. And then it's perfect timing for after all of that to mm-hmm. come out with this alternate universe Fantastic Four that ties all of it together. You see Dr. Doom, you see them come back into our timeline at the very end of the film, and it's different. And it's like the movie that the MCU can hold up is going like to the general public in the world. Look, we're back. Look yeah. how cool and inventive this is, and look how different this is. That's what my hope is. So then by that time, people are like, oh, what's the MCU cooking? Like, yeah. where are we going here? And now it's 2 years of we're back in.
Yeah.
You know,
that's no, what I totally think agree.
Is happening. And then probably this just only puts an emphasis on, like this movie puts an emphasis on why it's important that they got the Russos and McFeely again. Because yep. like, If Fantastic Four goes like they planned and it sets the table and now everyone's back in, like, I think at that point you play the hits. You yeah. get the writers that you know are going to write you a banger.
Yeah.
And that we're not going to have these questions anymore, you know?
And again, I just
like, how excited are you now for that movie? Like Doomsday and Secret Wars because of this.
No,
like,
exactly.
You see what it's like when you don't have the writers. Now yeah. we have the writers coming. Here it goes.
And that is one of those things where like I am getting... I haven't heard a ton of this lately anyway, but I'm having less and less patience for people that think Marvel's like running it back or admitting defeat by having to go back to the Russos. Because again, it's just, that would never be a conversation in any other film franchise. Like you would never, like there are whole genres right. defined by certain writers and directors. Like it's, no one's like, oh wow, they're putting out another Tarantino movie. Like I right. guess you just
or,
play the
or
hits.
Another Spielberg thing. You had to fall back on him. Like if Indiana Jones, like, oh, Lucas is involved and Spielberg's involved. Oh wow. You would never say that. If
no,
there was
it's
a new
like
one. You'd be like, oh great. There's a new freaking yeah, Indiana Jones movie.
Cause that they write these movies. Like these movies yeah. come, the movies that we know come from these creators. So we're bringing them back. Like it's weird that this expectation began to build up that like Marvel should be able to make things that give us everything that we loved about those movies, but don't you dare bring back any of the people that made them.
But don't do it again. You better not do it again. We don't like it if you do it.
But if it's not as good as that, we're going to be pissed also. So, you know. Yeah.
So you got to find someone else who does a totally different thing, but as good as they did it.
It's just.
That's why Jeff Loveness literally in our interview was like, remember that the clip that was just quoted by New Rock Stars? It's like Jeff Loveness is like, in some ways, it's the most impossible task of all time because yeah. they want to go a different direction and they're hiring people like me. But go ahead and write a movie following Endgame that's better and different. Go.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that's, I mean, it's impossible.
I mean, it's like, well, think of like Avatar, which, you know, I have not changed my position on, but Avatar was the previous, you know, biggest movie ever, James Cameron. And then you come back and Avatar 2, very similar movie, James Cameron. I don't think anybody was like, wow, well, you know,
wow,
it's a little sad to me that they couldn't nail it without someone other than James Cameron. It's like, well, no, they wouldn't, because that's the whole thing.
He made it.
Right. So I think, but to your point, yeah, I think I'm just more and more excited now because I'm realizing what the Russos and Marcus and Feely get about this franchise and what they understand. And I just, there are no guarantees, obviously, but yeah, by contrast, I think that the movies that they're working on together are going to be really fun. And I would love to see if like they can kind of stick around and keep working on like another franchise post Secret Wars, if that makes sense for them.
So here's the thing. Robbie and I love talking about this stuff. If you like talking about it too, we'd love to have you on board. So I already went over all the ways. Just get involved. Get involved. It's so fun. We come into these episodes wanting them to be an hour, and then we go 90 minutes, and it's just because we genuinely, like, we're breaking all of our rules. We have other things we have to do, and yet we just love talking about this. And these conversations get continued on Friends From Work Plus and next week on the main feed. Like, these conversations will be going on. So if you like it, we'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to have you involved. That's basically all I'll say. And if that doesn't wet your whistle, there's so much coming up. So there's going to be a lot to talk about. We got to go. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for supporting this podcast. And we'll see you back here. Come back here. We'll see you on Friends From Work.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.